Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. It Waits, Volume 1, Story 1. About 2 years ago, I was driving home from a night with friends. This was a rare occasion when I actually had not been drinking. I've been driving the same route every day for many years. I could drive these roads in my sleep. About 2 miles from home, I was taking an S-curve, and as I cleared the last corner, I drove through what I thought was a burst of light. I slammed on my brakes and turned to look out of my back glass. I saw a transparent young woman in a white nightgown floating across the road and fade away into the corn. The encounter lasted about 6 seconds. I jumped out of my skin, locked the doors, rolled up the windows, put my .45 in my lap, and raced home. 6 months went by before I told anyone or drove the road again. It's a mental shock when you experience something that wasn't supposed to be possible. On another note, when I was a kid, I overheard my stepmother telling her friend a story. She said she was walking over an old train bridge with a friend when she was a little girl. She said they were looking at each other, talking, when an older man wearing a white robe suddenly appeared in front of them. She said he looked real and his robe was extremely bright white. He reached out towards them with one arm and they turned around and ran. She looked back immediately and he was gone. The only way he could have disappeared was over the rail, but there was no splash. She never spoke of it again. When I was about 13, I was staying at my uncle's house. I thought it was strange that he was sleeping on his couch and was adamant about keeping his doors locked. Under the cushions were a large kitchen knife and a hammer. I teased him about it for a while. He had been watching television and drinking beer for a couple of hours when he finally told me why he was so paranoid. He said he was driving down the highway when he saw a female drifter. She was sitting Indian style on the edge of the road, staring into a field. He pulled up beside her, rolled down the window, and asked if she needed a ride. She didn't turn around or move at all. But she said, "You have a flat." My uncle got an overwhelming feeling of fear and drove away. He drove flat out for about 10 minutes before he pulled over again. Sure enough, he had a low tire. He was getting the jack under the car when he looked back, and the woman was about 50 feet behind him, walking his way. He rolled out and jumped back in and sped off, leaving all of his tools on the side of the road, ruining the tire and the wheel. He said to me, "There was no traffic. Nobody could have given her a ride. She covered 15 miles in 10 minutes. She was a ghost." The way it affected him, I have no doubt he was dead serious. To this day, he gets angry if you bring it up, saying he had forgotten and doesn't want to think about it. When I was 17, my lifelong best friend and I were gravel roading and talking. We started down a particular road when my buddy got a little uneasy. He began to tell me about an experience he had a couple of months prior in the same spot. He was leaving my house after a poker night and was taking back roads home. He said he was changing tapes when he saw a big orange ball roll into the center of the road out of the corner of his eye. Before he could react, a little girl dressed in early 1900s clothing ran out in front of him. He thought he went right through her. His voice was shaking, and I could see tears in his eyes. He thought he had killed a little girl. He stopped and got out, saw nothing, no ball, and no girl. I swore I would never tell anyone. But that happened a long, long time ago. Story number 2. This happened at Lake Winnipesaukee in New Hampshire on the night of July 4th. I was the youngest in a mixed group of friends sitting by the shore. I remember how dark and cold it was and couldn't tell if I was getting goosebumps from the weather or from everyone else sharing scary stories. Nevertheless, I was listening to their myths about sea monsters and whatnot and kept my eyes fixed on the moonlit water. Someone threw in some humor to the conversation and the group had a good laugh of it, gave me a good chuckle, and I was relieved to have a break from the scary stories. In the middle of this joy, half the group felt silent, and I saw one of my friends go from happy to shocked in a second. She pointed her finger across the water to the other shore and yelled, terrified, "What is that?" I turned my head, just in time to see a light illuminating from behind the trees of the opposite shore, and it was expanding. The center was sun bright with no apparent source, and the edges were soft, but the light just continued to expand in every direction. It was as if a bubble of daylight was being blown up, engulfing some of the houses on the opposite shore, and kept going until almost reaching us. But as soon as it got that close, it completely vanished in a quick moment. It disappeared so fast that my eyes took a few moments to adjust to the darkness. The rest of the night, we tried coming up with an explanation, discarding lighthouses that weren't there and boats that couldn't possibly produce such a massive illuminated field. We were left with no explanation and left the supernatural out of the debate. The next morning, we scanned the local news online to see if anyone had reported it, but no one did. A few days later, I was talking to another kid at a local gas station who stayed up just as late and lived close to our area, and he didn't see anything. Six of us could not have gone nut insane and yet be the only ones who saw this massive light that lit up two shores on the night of July 4th on the biggest lake in our state. To this day, when I visit my lake house, I think about what could have caused it. This is my second story, and it takes place just outside of St. Petersburg, Russia. I'm a Russian citizen living in the United States, but until recently, I would visit my home every summer to see my family and friends. We have a summer house outside the city called the Daka in Russia, close to the border of Finland. It's in a tiny settlement, kind of like a neighborhood about an hour northwest from St. Petersburg, and completely secluded, surrounded by forest. Everybody there knows everybody else, and the whole neighborhood is like a giant family. We have recurring problems with wildlife, such as wild boars destroying property, bears strolling in, and aggressive wild dogs taking our pets. I lost a cat and a dog to these animals in one summer. When I was 14, though, a lifelong friend of mine and I had a stupid teenage idea to stroll out into the depths of the forest equipped with nothing more than a compass and a knife and find our way back. In other words, get lost on purpose. So we headed out in the morning and hiked in what we imagined to be a straight line. Not long into the hike, we both started getting nervous and uneasy. We both felt disoriented and, worst of all, followed. Pretending to be brave, we pushed on through this terrifying feeling of being stalked. Finally, about 40 minutes into the hike, we found a river and decided to rest. The forest, at this point, became dead. The trees were all dried out, thin, widely spread apart, and there were signs of previous forest fires. The dead feeling of the forest and the slow trickle of the river made me feel more uneasy, but my friend had gotten over it by then and started collecting random berries he found growing close to the shore. I stood on the lookout while he remained oblivious. I wish he'd stay alert because I was near tears. I was so nervous. I was overwhelmed with fear of being lost and followed. Finally, I heard rustles and twigs snapping from behind me across the river. My friend heard it too and froze still. The trees were spaced far enough apart and thin enough that it was hard to imagine anything hiding from our sight. But fixed on the direction of the sound, I came close to my friend and asked him, "Did you hear that?" My friend didn't answer, but instead changed colors, like a chameleon to stone white, and his eyes just seemed to pop out of his head. The fear on his face made my heart sink, and I dreaded finding out what he saw. He simply screamed, horrified, "Run!" and took off in a seemingly random direction. I was caught off guard, but when I looked across the river, I saw a man wearing a dark cloak and a black rag on his head, crouching, watching me. He stood up and watched me. Then my eyes saw the knife he was holding. From no more than 60 yards from us, he shifted into a full sprint towards me, and that's when I took off after my friend. I could hear my friend somewhere in front of me and the man somewhere behind me. He jumped the river. After nearly 10 minutes of full sprinting, I made it to a thicker part of the forest and hid myself among thick bushes where I lay prone, catching my breath, listening intently. My heart beat seemed to make the earth tremble beneath me. A few minutes later, I saw the man who was now walking, scanning the woods. He aimlessly walked about, and I watched him eventually walk off into the wrong direction. and disappear in the distance. But I remained still for what seemed like an hour, constantly holding my breath at the slightest noise. After I collected myself, I began thinking how to go about finding my friend, or even my way out. Sometime during my panic, I dropped my compass, and there was no way of retrieving it. My friend had his knife, so I knew he had at least some form of self-defense. After a long term of thinking, I finally decided the only way we would find each other was by calling out his name. So I took deep breaths and prepared, and then yelled out his name at the top of my lungs. My voice echoed throughout the forest, and I was sure it would carry for a long distance. I then hugged the ground under the bushes again and listened and listened and listened. After a long, dreadful period, I was getting no response. A creeping sense of hopeless loneliness took over, but I was prepared to yell out one more time when I finally heard him call back. His voice was faint, but I determined the general direction. I immediately called out again, and his response came quicker this time. I'm sure both of us knew the dangers of giving out our voices at the presence of the mysterious man, but we had no other choice. I made my way towards my friend's voice in short sprints between covers. I called out again and heard a response closer, then again and again, until we ran into each other. We both hid in the thickest brush we could find and tried to figure out a plan to get back. My friend was experienced, and I trusted his suggestion to navigate using the sun, which was now making its way down to the horizon. We walked towards the direction he had proposed, east, constantly scanning our area and periodically taking cover. We believed we had lost the man. Eventually, a rustle in the woods startled us again, and we quickly took cover. A dog came running through the woods with its tongue out. We quickly recognized it as one of our neighbor's dogs. It found us hiding quickly, and it came to us when we revealed ourselves, and we were relieved to greet it. Shortly after, our neighbor came into view, so we ran to him and told the whole story. He escorted us safely back to our homes. We were more than a kilometer off course and reported our story to our parents. One of the other neighbors was present, and he quickly said he'd seen such a man in the woods himself and believed he was a bandit or a homeless fellow, either way with murderous intent. Practically every man in the neighborhood armed themselves that night and swept the perimeter in the woods to make sure the man wasn't anywhere close by our settlement and didn't find him. My friend and I were of course punished and taken back to the city where we spent the rest of our summer. That was better, in my opinion, than being slaughtered in the woods or hopelessly lost. We got very lucky that our neighbor was at mushroom picking that evening with his dog. Otherwise, we might not have found our way back. Story number 3. This story dates back to the early 90s. I was newly married and recently moved to New Hampshire from Ohio. It was southern New Hampshire, and we lived in an old house on a main road in our area. Our neighbors to either side of us were separated by an above average sized lot of trees. One night, I was getting ready for bed, and my wife, who was laying in bed, jumped up with terror in her eyes and voice and asked me if I heard that. I said, "What?" About that time, I heard what I was certain was a woman being beaten or raped in the patch of woods outside our room. We knew the girl that lived next to us, separated by the patch of woods. My wife immediately called her. She was there, but had not heard anything. When my wife hung up the phone, we heard the scream once again. I threw on some clothes, grabbed my .357 and a flashlight, and began to patrol the perimeter of the woods. I followed a path through the woods over to where a friend lived and checked around their house. Found nothing at all. When I got back home, maybe 10 minutes later, we called the police in our little town. The dispatcher told us that she would send a patrol over, but it was most likely a fisher cat. She said it was mating season and that their call was very much like a woman's. I guess because I was from the Midwest, I had never even heard of the animal. Another weird part of the story is, less than a week later, a coworker of mine heard what he thought was his little girl screaming outside. He went running outside about 8 p.m., and on his way outside, he saw a little girl in the kitchen, his little girl. He called the police about a little girl screaming in the woods, and he got the same answer I got. He grew up in Massachusetts and New Hampshire, and had never heard of a fisher cat. Who knows what that is? Next story. I grew up on the Tennessee-Alabama-Georgia border west of Chattanooga. Not in the sticks, but definitely a rural area. My parents had a 10-ish acres of woods behind the house and a kit-built log cabin. The house was on a level area about halfway up a steep hill. And I mean steep. It was work to pedal up the thing on a bike. Turn right out of the driveway and you go down the hill and up another one before you get to another road, but go left out of the driveway and you go to the dead end at the top of the hill. The house was two stories with living room, kitchen, laundry room, master bed and bathrooms downstairs, and two bedrooms and a bathroom upstairs. I have one brother, younger than me by just shy of 11 years. Our bedrooms were upstairs, mine above my parents' bedroom overlooking the side backyard, and his above the kitchen facing the detached garage. A house had a deck between the garage and the house. The house had always had kind of a weird feeling about it, but when my brother was about two or so, things got strange. Things would go missing and reappear in plain view later. Things would break. Once the toaster oven turned itself on while my dad was in the shower. Nobody else was home. The only reason the house didn't burn down was he smelled the smoke and came running out with a fire extinguisher. But around his third or fourth birthday, my brother asked for a tent to go over his bed so he wouldn't have to see the face in the window at night anymore. Completely out of the blue. Well, we'd known he was having trouble sleeping, but this was the first we'd heard of it. He said the pale face had been there most nights for a while and it was scaring him. Naturally, my parents freaked out, replaced the locks on all the windows and doors, bought shades, curtains, and a tent for the bed to make my brother feel better. Dad started making a point of taking the garbage out to the cans by the garage after dark with a heavy mag light most nights after that, but never saw anything. Then a while later, when we asked how he was feeling, my brother said the tent helped, but the face showed up in his room now. Naturally, again, parents freaked. Asked him what the man looked like. He said it wasn't a man, it was a face. Parents took my brother to the doctor, got him checked out. Everything came back fine. So he's 3 and a half or so, and I'm 14-ish. I did the most incredibly, monumentally stupid thing I could have ever done. I was raised in the church and still believe somewhat in the supernatural. So one night, I took the trash out, strapping on the display show sword my parents had brought me on a trip to a medieval-themed restaurant. I dropped the trash off, and on my way back to the house, I stopped on the deck underneath my brother's window, planted my teen feet, looked straight up at the night sky, and told whatever was out there to pick on something its own size. It could come and get me if it wanted, but leave my brother the hell alone. I meant it with every fiber of my being. Looking back, it's as if something had been watching and chuckled. Challenge accepted. My stuff started showing up broken in my room. Invisible things would cast shadows. On multiple occasions, I'd hear something waking me up in the middle of the night walking around my room. The floorboards creaked quite loudly. On one occasion, my dad woke me up out of a dead sleep at 2 in the morning and told me to quit walking around and go to bed. I'd been sound asleep and didn't sleepwalk. And one night, I woke up to something growling, chuckling at me from right beside my bed. I rolled over to see what it was and just saw a tall, dark shadow in the shape of a man wearing a top hat and cape with unkempt long hair with no detail to the shape other than pale eyes and teeth. Let me tell you, that was not fun. It only left after I squeezed my eyes shut, rolled over away from it, and frantically recited the Lord's Prayer multiple times. Things kept happening the rest of the year and into the next. But the most disturbing experience, and the one that someone else was a witness to, was that next summer, I'd walk out to get the mail after dark because I'd forgotten to get it earlier. We had a split rail fence at the road between the yard and mailbox, so I had to walk around to get to it. If you get off the front porch, you turn left, and walk down a pea gravel walkway about 10 to 15 yards, then about 25 or so up the driveway to the road. Then the mailbox is 3 or 4 yards to the right. So I take a flashlight because we'd seen a snake sunning earlier that day on the driveway, and I don't like snakes. And the porch light is the only light aside from a dim street light about 100 yards up the road. And I'm standing there getting the mail out of the mailbox and hear what sounded to me like a person lazily walking up the hill from my right, in other words, downhill. It sounded like boot heels, a sharp tap-tap sound that carries. I shrugged, figured somebody's out for a walk and didn't think anything about it, but turned halfway to see if it was our neighbor from across the street or the one from up the hill. I didn't see anything. I looked again, this time with a flashlight. Nothing. As I shined the flashlight, the sound stops. So I kind of shrugged again and went back to flipping through the mail and walking towards the driveway. The sound picked up again at a faster pace from behind me. I stopped, turned, swept the flashlight up the road. Nothing. And the sound now keeps coming. I turned up the driveway a little faster, but not quickly, thinking, don't act like prey. I hear the walking sound and I turn up the driveway and it's still behind me. I can hear the difference in the sound as the steps from the roadway to our blacktop driveway. At that point, I freaked out and booked it across the yard to our porch, fumbling for the door handle. I heard it faintly walking up the driveway behind me, towards the house in a familiar manner, not following me across the yard. We have a glass outer door, closed, with me desperately trying to open it, and an open inner wooden door. My mom saw and heard me working at the door and came to open it for me. I told her, do you hear that? Hear what? She asked and stopped. We looked at each other as we heard the sound of footsteps walking up the pea gravel walkway between the driveway and the porch. I swept my flashlight up and down the walk, but there was nothing there. The sound kept coming. They were close enough that we could tell where on the walkway they were coming from, and we definitely should have been able to see something at the 5 yards or so it was away from us. It was dark, but not pitch black. It walked up the road to the head of the porch and stopped, just outside the light cast from the porch light, about a step and a half or so from the porch itself. It just stopped, like something standing there, looking at us from a couple of steps away. And our eyes tell us that there's nothing there. We just stood there. I was too afraid to move, to bolt. And I guess she didn't want to leave me by myself by moving first. We stood there for a good 30 seconds when my dad came outside to ask what was going on. We told him we heard something walking up the walkway. He looked out and said, there's nothing there. Turned around and went back in. We looked at each other and turned to go back in. And we heard the sound of something walking back down the driveway. We listened as it got to the road, turned left, and started to walk uphill, and then it was gone. Dad didn't believe us when we told him what we heard. Or rather, he believed we heard something, but thought it was a deer or something. Hooves sound like boot heels on concrete, he said. That Wednesday night, we got back from church to see him sitting, white as a ghost, on the couch. Mom sent me straight to bed. I found out the next morning that while we were at church, one of those ball yo-yo toys that I had left on the coffee table had jumped off the table as he was reading and chased him uphill through the house for a couple of minutes. Mom had the preacher come out and bless the house with oil that week. Lots more crazy stuff kept happening outside, but very little in the house. On that scale, I did have things go missing and show up late in plain sight. So people can say there's nothing in the dark that isn't in the light, but I know better. I also know better than to challenge the supernatural on my own anymore. Next story. Well, there was one time myself and a friend of mine decided to go hiking. This was about a year ago. There was a spot on Maui called Io Valley. It was a place of the biggest battle the island saw when Kamehameha decided to conquer the islands. We decided to hike this dry riverbed in search of an old mining cave deep into the mountains that was supposedly abandoned. It was supposed to have the carts, tools, and the candles there. I'd searched for it before with other people, but it remained elusive. So anyway, at the beginning of the hike, we entered the dry riverbed, and we instantly got this heavy air, cold chill, and the feeling of being watched. But we pressed on. About an hour into the trek, the feeling had not subsided, but we still wanted to find the cave. We found clues and evidence of it. Parts of old rails, square holes in the rocks, perfectly smooth and squared rocks resembling steps. So we came to a rock face that had stopped at our previous expedition. And my friend found the way around it this time, so we soldiered on. It was about 50 feet from there that we both froze dead in our tracks. And a sudden gush of cold air swept through us. neither of us wanted to admit that we were a little bit creeped out, but we agreed to journey on just a little further. It was when we climbed a smaller rock face, only to find sandstone stacked one on top of the other. As we walked past it, my friend was in front of me. He suddenly turned to look at something, and out of the corner of my eye, I saw movement. When I turned and looked for a split second, I saw what looked like a young Hawaiian boy in a malo, which is a loincloth, with a spear running through the brush. It was only a split second, and afterwards I stopped in disbelief. My friend turned towards me at the same time, with a cold wind starting to howl around us. A second later, the two of us turned tail and ran. What was a 2-hour hike upriver turned out to be a 20-minute sprint downriver. Later on that day, my friend's grandmother told him that the cave was abandoned for a reason. I still don't know exactly what that might have been. And that anyone who finds it brings something bad back with them. Needless to say, I've given up efforts to locate its existence. Next story. This was a story told to me by my aunt way back in the day. I'm not sure when it happened, but I was told the story in 2001. She was a flight attendant for Continental Airlines back in Guam. Now, my auntie was a very straightforward, quiet person. It was a normal day, smooth flight so far back to Guam. She went down to the bottom of the plane by where the luggage is. I think she might have been refilling her cart or something. While she's about to make her way back up, she notices something out of the corner of her eye. It's an old woman sitting on a wheelchair. She thought it was strange, but went up and approached the woman. She said, "Ma'am, you're not supposed to be down here. How did you get here?" The old woman smiled and said, "Oh, I'm traveling with my husband, Ronald. He's sitting in seat E2. My aunt goes back up and finds seat E2. She ends up finding a man named Ronald and asks if he was flying with his wife. Ronald says, "Yes, I am flying with her, but she's dead. I'm bringing her body back to Guam." My aunt freaked out, went back down with two of her co-workers to find a coffin behind some boxes where the old lady was sitting. My aunt retired shortly after. The look on her face and the tone of her voice while she told the story is something that I will never forget. Next story. One day I was going to my friend's house in the suburbs to spend the night. I was 11 years old and was looking forward to a night of junk food and video games. It was probably 10 p.m. and it was quiet. My friend only lived a block away, so I said goodbye to Mom and walked over. My friend's driveway was illuminated by one of those huge security spotlights. As I walked up the driveway, I noticed a shadow in the midst of it, the light below. It was a man-shaped shadow, only it wasn't on the ground. Or it was a shadow, but one occupying a physical space, same as any man. The silhouette seemed to suggest it was wearing a wide-brimmed hat or something like that. But the worst part was the red eyes. God help me, it was as if they laid my soul bare. To touch some raw nerve and saw all my terror. I don't recall exactly what happened from that point. I do know that the feeling of absolute helplessness and dread will never leave my memory. It's a sort of fear that even being in a combat zone can't touch. It's enveloping, sickening, and pushes you into this place where you've basically accepted you're about to die. The next thing I remembered, I was almost home, running as hard as I could down the sidewalk. I stopped at my door, somehow composed myself, and didn't say a word to anyone. How could I? In time, I learned, probably from Art Bell or some craziness, of the phenomenon known as shadow people. Many individuals have claimed to have a run-in with them, and it gave me brief hope I wasn't totally nuts. Now, that encounter has never been far from my mind. And years later, I was on a visit home from the Air Force, sleeping in the new house my wife had bought in one of those horrible gray box subdivisions. It was a quiet subdivision, as we were well in the back, and there were few houses actually populated back there. For some reason, perhaps my second or third night back, I couldn't sleep. I kept remembering something. I had an uneasy feeling. I knew that if I looked out the window, he would be in the street. I couldn't take it anymore. I looked down to the streets below, softly lit by street lamps further down a road, and there he was. The same silhouette, the same shadow, squarely standing on the street below. Same red eyes, looking up, full of the strange, malevolent energy. The dread wasn't as bad this time, almost as if distance and time had lessened it. I felt almost resigned that he was out there somewhere. I left the window and went into a strange dreamless sleep, somehow refreshed when I woke up. Now, as I mentioned, I enlisted in the United States Air Force and was stationed on a Spanish base back in the semi-desert of Andalusia, right along many of the old frontiers between the Moors and Christian. Our tiny detachment was on the far, far side of the base, well out past where anyone else went. Beyond us was a landscape not unlike that of West Texas or New Mexico. We had a single light on the main building and a compound some 50 yards away that was fenced in. As we were doing space surveillance, it was very important there was little light pollution. I, of course, worked on a night shift where there was just me and one other individual, usually safely inside on duty. A few creepy things happened there. Pounding on the outside of the building when we knew no one was out there. And one evening, while doing some work in the office, I heard footsteps walk past my open door, despite the place being abandoned and no one being there. Occasionally, we'd hear a dog bark in the distance, then almost immediately bark again, sounding closer, then sounding as if he were right next to you. It was something unnerving that happened to us on several occasions. That's an old land. That's seen Roman legions, Moorish kingdoms, the Inquisition, and the sacking of several nearby towns from Napoleon's troops. But one night, walking from the compound to the main building's door, it was different. No wind. I could see the single light over the door of the main building shining brightly, casting its light in a radius all around the door. I don't know how to explain what happened next. It was almost as if my vision wouldn't quite allow me to look straight ahead to the space occupied by the door. There was a feeling of dread, and when I did, I almost wasn't surprised by what I saw. The shadow stood nearly as high as the door. Its head seemed bowed, and my sight began to race it towards me. I had the feeling somehow if I saw those eyes this time, I was lost. I turned and walked back to the compound. Strangely, this time I didn't run. I felt everything around me in perfect clarity, almost as if I was in control, as never before. It felt like running would be a mistake, almost as if it were playing some game with rules I didn't completely understand. After all these years, it's almost like we're regarding each other as acquaintances. That's probably the wrong word. There's something malicious and terrifying about these images. I'm a Christian man, and no, I'm not completely crazy. My wife thinks it's an overactive imagination, and maybe she's right, but I do know he is out there. And just as sure as I know I saw something, I know in my heart and soul, it won't be the last time.